Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, and welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski, and I'm actually in the same square with my brother, co-host Dr. Carl Nadolski Jr. And with us, we have Dr. Sandy Basson. She's an endocrinology fellow right now, and we're going to be talking about physical activity and type 2 diabetes. Welcome to the show, Dr. Basson.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, so where are you right now? What fellowship?
So I'm currently finishing up my endocrine fellowship at Mount Sinai in New York City. So it is an amazing place. You see lots of very, very active people, and there is food everywhere. So I've definitely been enjoying my time.
Yeah, I love New York. Every time I go, I always have to get some sort of good food there. Anything you could ever want is there. And then you walk a lot, so it doesn't really matter from an energy expenditure standpoint.
So that's funny. You can get like 10,000 steps, no problem.
Yeah, very cool. Okay, so what's your background? Like, did you get into physical activity before you became a doctor, or how did this come about?
So I met Carl at one of the ACE meetings, and I was actually joking to him because I am a very big plant-based medicine doc. So for me, I feel like diet is a huge thing, and physical activity is something that even I find hard to do. It's impossible for you to find me at the gym, but I am very active. I love to walk around the city. I'm always on my feet. I'm never really sitting for more than a couple of minutes. And so I've always been interested in lifestyle nutrition, especially for things like weight loss, type 2 diabetes, which is an epidemic and we see all over endocrinology. And personally, for me, my real interest was, what about these small changes that we make in our day to day? So more low intensity physical activity, more to justify, I think, my own lifestyle, since I definitely find it hard to put in 60 minutes of going to the gym every day.
Yeah, that's why Casey likes to any study with peanuts, because he eats so many peanut M&Ms. He needs to justify his love for peanuts.
And just to be clear, he said Casey. That's my nickname, by the way. In case that confused you, because it confuses
you. Oh, you only know him as Carl. I see.
Yeah.
So, so you're a doc who is physically active, not necessarily docs who lift. That's fine, because we are not pigeonholed here. We love exercise. So this was it's a pretty cool review here. Yeah. It's just taking a look.
And yeah, so tell us what, so you and more than just, was it Dr. Srinath and anybody else?
It was Dr.
That wrote this.
It was Dr. Was a big review where we looked at the different exercise guidelines that places like the American Diabetes Association, ACE, American College of Sports Medicine, all of the different guidelines that they have for exercise. But then we took a deeper dive into what literature actually exists for low intensity exercise. So even though walking can be more moderate, we looked more at the low intensity walking, like yoga, household tasks, just breaking sedentary behavior, and what data that we have out there.
Yeah. And so then what, I mean, other than, was it really just kind of your own, like, hey, I don't really exercise, but I'm very physically active. I mean, literally, is that what sort of prompted you to do this?
Yeah. So the big thing is that when I speak with a lot of my patients and even a lot of my friends, you know, it's hard to see people who are exercising very regularly. There was actually a study that was done that showed that it was a survey of 1,600 patients with diabetes, and 70% of them either had no regular physical activity or insufficient physical activity. So if that's majority of our population, it's hard to take people like that and then suddenly say, now go to the gym for 30 minutes, 5 times a week. And so I kind of felt like, you know, when I talk with my patients, I'm always saying, you know, every little step counts. If you're able to get up and walk for 5 minutes every hour, if you're able to just take a 10-minute walk around the block, that's huge. And I was kind of curious if to what I was saying actually had scientific backing, or it just felt really good to say, and the patients liked it too.
Well, you're a lifestyle medicine person and into the plant-based stuff. Are you into the Blue Zone?
Yes, data? The Blue Zone diets and all of those things.
I don't think there are a bunch of meatheads in the Blue Zones. I mean, we're docs who lift, so we like our big muscles, but I don't think there's a bunch of muscly folks, centenarians. Seems like just being physically active was probably a good bet there.
Well, and, you know, and you talk about the guidelines, you looked at what the guidelines are saying, exactly what you're talking about started making it into those guidelines, like the ADA's standards of care several years ago, because of all the data that you're about to tell us, you know, just even about breaking up sedentary time, right? So I mean, that's literally in the guidelines. So I always tell patients that too, when we talk about so many sedentary jobs, unfortunately, and we find ways to break that up and just be moving in other realms. And I say, it's literally in the guidelines because there are, you know, good data for that now. So tell us a little bit about some of the fun things that you guys came up with. And by the way, for everyone listening, this was published in the American Journal of Lifestyle Medicine. I think it was just published online initially in June. Is that right?
Yeah.
And then it'll be in the whatever month. Do you know if it's print yet?
I'm not 100% sure, actually.
Okay. But anyways, it's available.
So give us the rundown. What'd you find?
So we found a couple of interesting things. The first thing is all the exercise guidelines, when they're talking about aerobic and resistance training, they're saying to kind of aim for 150 minutes of aerobic training and 2 to 3 days of resistance training. But if you look at that decrease in A1C, it's really around 0.5 to 0.7% is what we're kind of seeing even with that activity, which again kind of pushes to my entire thing with diabetes and blood sugar control really being a lot about, when we're looking at lifestyle, how you're eating as well. So comparing that to the data that exists for low intensity exercise, there does seem to be a lot of similarities. So for example, like walking, a lot of the big like randomized control trials that we were able to find was more for walking rather than the other low intensity activities. And there were some that were more observational that showed that, like in the nurses' health study, women who were walking regularly throughout the week, they had a 20 to 30% decreased risk of cancer. I mean, sorry, not cancer, of 20 to 30% decreased risk of diabetes. And there were randomized control trials that saw a decrease in A1C of about 0.5% by walking for about an hour every day.
So is it possible that it's additive to just the higher intensity or moderate intensity, like activity and resistance training, where if you get more physical activity, that doesn't have to be purposeful exercise, you get a benefit from that. And then it might be additive, may not be, to add on like the purposeful exercise or structured exercise.
100%. The more active that you can be throughout the day, it's better for your muscles, it's better for your body. And not just thinking about diabetes or obesity, but even just longevity and quality of life is definitely improved. And kind of based on the information that we found, when someone's thinking, what should I do in terms of walking? What we kind of found the most successful was if you're aiming for about an hour of walking a day or 10,000 steps a day. So using things like a Fitbit or an Apple Watch or even your phone and the health app to kind of see, am I getting to 10,000 steps?
It's interesting because there has been like a lot of talk about that 10,000 step goal over the past several years where
It was kind of made up,
right? Yeah. But then, so then people are saying, well, what, I mean, they kind of just say, well, let's just get everyone walking as much as we can. But you actually found that now, and looking back through the data, it is about So it's about right.
It's right about, for the decreased mortality and all sorts of stuff. It's right around, it's like 8 or 10,000 steps or more. It's somewhere right around. That's kind of a sweet spot.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of funny because now that I kind of have this data, I would ask patients more and we're looking at their Fitbits and kind of tracking how many steps they were doing. Most people actually averaged 5,000 to 6,000 a day, even in New York City. And part of that is also working from home. So the days that they would walk to work, I would kind of recommend taking the bus stop, one stop sooner than you needed to get out and to walk that, because that difference doesn't actually make you later for work. And with some of my patients, it was funny because we were joking that they thought that they were getting 10,000 a day. They look, it's only 6,000. And they're like, I have to walk around my block 3 times to actually make it up 2,000 steps and get what I needed to be doing.
Yeah, that's nice. I mean, you two as endocrinologists, probably talk about like postprandial, the glucose excursions. I don't know if you see with your CGMs about how if they actually do walk afterwards, it may blunt that response a little bit. And maybe that's a motivator of some sort, and they can actually see the data right there. I don't know. I
Yeah.
notice it when I would do it myself.
We actually do see that. The data that's actually out there isn't as well put together. Part of the thing is CGMs are only recently starting to be added into studies to be looked at. And so a lot of times it's looking at the area under the curve and looking at how much that curve and that spike is decreased. So the data, it's a little bit harder to identify it because it's not really looking at like, oh, the blood sugar went from this to this, or this is how many points it dropped every time you walk. But it looks like people's blood sugars do go down like 6 to kind of 40% with walking after a meal. So walking after meals, especially like dinner time, people just go straight to the couch. So that's the biggest one where please like go for a 5, 10 minute walk just to get moving instead of going back into that rut.
Yeah, it's a, I think, well, so the other thing you talk about, because we can talk about the physiology and all how great it is if people do it, but if people don't do it, it doesn't matter. So it looks like you all discuss kind of behavioral change and removing barriers and finding ways to actually get people to do it. Is it, did you find anything there that might be useful?
Or just your own personal thoughts?
I think that's the most important thing. And unfortunately, as doctors, we don't have that much time with patients to be able to really get to know them. And I think that's where a multidisciplinary team of having people like dietitians, psychologists to help out with people who are really serious about making those lifestyle changes is so important. Some of the things that I like to do in my visit is because it's a shorter period of time, asking them, like, they say they want their diabetes to get better, they want to lose weight. And then I ask them why. And kind of have that in my note to remember that if they're on the older side, a lot of times people will say, oh, I'm already 70, what's the point? But if you have grandchildren, you want to be able to still be active and be able to run around with them. Or a lot of times people don't want to add additional medications to what they're doing, or they just want to be healthier, they want to feel less stressed out. And exercising actually decreases a lot of the nervous system, that sympathetic overdrive response. So even by exercising, your dopamine levels are going up, you're feeling so much better, and that's just a reason to be more active.
Yeah, it's a good family thing. So after dinners, we always go for a walk. And if I always think in my mind, all right, I know I'm blunting my glucose excursions, but it does. It's a good thing to
Well,
go
now
with
because
your.
of that, everyone's going to start wearing a CGM. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, no, you just, I don't even wear, I have to wear it. I just know. I'm like, all right, this is good. I'm putting this glucose as fuel and not having as much of a
Yeah, actually, it's a
excursion.
good reason for healthy people not to have to wear CGM that we keep talking about because you just do the
Yeah.
right things anyways. Okay, so what about because you also mentioned a bunch of other different types of activities that definitely do have some data have been studied, ranging from yoga to tai chi, and even household tasks. So what it tell us about some of
We
those
all know
things.
Casey doesn't, or Carl doesn't do any household tests, so
God, here we go.
we
Honestly, like the household tasks, I think are what get me a lot of the time too. So the different things like household tasks, cleaning, vacuuming, repairing the house, gardening, those all do take energy. And a lot of the studies, the way that they broke it down was by looking at metabolic equivalents or METs. So basically, each activity was given a certain number of points based on how much oxygen you need to be able to do that activity. So, for example, washing dishes, that's like 1.8 to 2.5 METs. And cooking is 2 to 3. Cleaning is a little bit more, it's around 3 to 4. And just to give an idea, like sedentary behavior is less than 1.5, and walking a mile is around 5 METs. So they're all kind of around that area. And then when you talk about running a mile, now we're kind of going more up to 8 or 9 METs. So for all of these reviews that were done, there were no randomized control trials to really be able to look at like how much somebody was doing. It was more observational trials, but there was one large one that looked at 15,000 Chinese men, and it found that the more hours they spent doing household tasks, which equated to a higher number of METs, it was associated with a lower risk of diabetes. And there was one study of people in France where those who had diabetes who did around 680 METs a week of household tasks also seemed to have improvements in their sugars. But again, these are more associational studies that are there. But it definitely shows that these household tests are helping in terms of our physical activity, getting us to move. And they're also the most common things that people do. There was a survey that kind of looked at different types of physical activity, and household tests was like the second most common type of physical activity that people do.
It's the least most common for my brother. I want to know how he can get away with doing like zero household tasks and still stay so ripped.
Yeah, he's meeting the aerobic requirements.
No, he had abs in utero.
Here we go.
That's the genetics.
Oh God! See, then it's a good thing Rachel doesn't actually listen to this.
I know.
She's like, see,
no.
Everybody, he doesn't do anything.
She's literally out mowing the lawn right now.
Oh,
I saw her.
Yeah, I know. what I wish I would have done more of growing up, though, is yoga. Because not necessarily for the health benefits, because like, yeah, I do other stuff, but it would have actually really benefited me and certainly
yeah,
you, because you're even stiffer than I am.
I can't move for the day. I have a bamboo spine.
Yeah, you do. And I think it would have helped athletically, but a lot of people really love yoga, and there are a lot of studies showing the health benefits from the physical part of yoga, but also, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people like yoga because, you know, mind, body, spirit type health benefits. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah.
So I am a very big yoga person. You can't find me at the gym, but you can definitely find me at a yoga studio. And I am very flexible, unlike my husband, who also refuses to come to a single yoga class. So he has back problems in his family. And I'm just sitting there like, I'm so flexible, can very easily do like a back bend and everything. So I think that yoga is great. In terms of the studies, this is kind of the area where yoga and Tai Chi were the least studied that they had. The trials were about 12 weeks long, and it was having people do yoga daily for 1 hour, 6 to 7 days a week. So it is fairly intense in terms of the amount of yoga they were doing. And they were looking more at fasting blood sugars and sugars after eating, postprandial sugars. And again, it was very varied in terms of how people responded. It was anywhere from like 10 to 30% improvement in the blood sugars. And same kind of thing with Tai Chi. There was one review that looked at 14 different studies that showed the A1C decreased by 0.5% or so. So actually similar to where we are with exercise, but again, much more frequent, almost daily for an hour. And one of the things that I do wonder is if that sympathetic nervous system response of learning how to calm your body down, decrease your stress response, if that also potentially helps in terms of how much sugar your body's making as well.
Can you give a description of those types of activities for people out there? I mean, I wouldn't even, I mean, you know, I think a lot of people understand yoga to some degree. I wouldn't be able to describe Tai Chi to anybody. So could you give a little description of those things and anything else you found, you know, some of those other activities that you found? I don't even know how to.
I knew you were reading that. It's what, the Qigong or what is it? I saw him reading it. And I noticed he skipped over that one. I was like, I know he doesn't know how to say it. I don't know how to say it either, but I was laughing at him.
So all three of them are similar, where they're kind of focused on the mind and the body and focusing on different active movements as well as maintaining different postures. So they all do require a lot of postural muscles for balance, as well as a lot of strengthening with your own body rather than necessarily using weights. So for example, in yoga, when you're doing kind of the standard poses, you're going into a plank for a short period of time. You're kind of doing part of a push-up for a time as you're going through all of these different steps. So yoga, people are more familiar with. It's the ancient Indian form of using the mind and body with the movement. Tai Chi and Qigong are more East Asian, where they also look at physical activity and the breath, and they kind of focus on a flow of movements. So Tai Chi is the flow of the movements, while Qigong is kind of repeating the same movement over while focusing on your breathing. And so those two are a little bit slower than yoga tends to be.
This is a little off topic, but do you have, you know this stuff pretty well, and do you have suggestions as to, you know, who might want to consider those specific activities for some of the other benefits beyond just, you know, basically we're talking about cardiometabolic glycemic health, but just other, you know, like you said, the mind, body, spirit stuff, like who should, like, what should I do? You know me a little bit. What should I do? I'm all messed up.
So you would definitely be someone who yoga would be good for. So yoga is a little bit more active. It gets you moving more, and it's much more about flexibility and stretching out the muscles. I think Tai Chi and Qigong are slower movements and more focused on a little bit of like balance and the breathing. So for patients who are just starting, who with diabetes, if you're have trouble with balance or gait instability, I think potentially starting with Tai Chi or Qigong to begin with, and then they do have easier forms of yoga as well as more intense ones that are similar to exercise, is kind of where you can move up to if you're looking for a little bit more of a workout.
What if I told you I'm like a stress box and I need to figure out how to deal with my own stressors?
I think all three are good options, but at least for me, like yoga is very, like I need to still be moving. I'm a very active person, like I was saying before. So even if I'm focusing on my breath, I need more activity than less. So yoga is much better for that.
Okay, cool.
So probably have a Zanny bar with a cocktail, go to yoga.
Oh my God. Okay, that is not a medical recommendation by anybody on this podcast. Everyone knows. That was a joke.
He's like the little...
Before I get fired again, I usually get fired every episode because of Spencer. So.
I think my favorite is like sometimes when I go to a yoga class and they'll be like this, well, most often a woman will bring her significant other and he'll be like jacked, clearly someone who goes to the gym, and then he can't keep up with these poses and he's like falling over trying to like get into these.
But it would be very, very, very beneficial.
Any other notable things we haven't covered?
I think that the big thing is how to actually get people to start doing these. Yeah. So the whole reason why I was looking at low intensity exercise is because it's difficult to get people to start exercising, to really jump in. And you don't want to have a weekend warrior where someone's done nothing and then suddenly tries to go all out and ends up hurting themselves. And so trying to figure out where that sweet spot is of this is what I can start at, and then slowly moving up. So setting goals with patients, the SMART goals is one of my favorite. It's specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and timely. Basically walking through those to say, this is something I can actually achieve. And then coming back like the next week or a week after and saying, this is how I'm going to be increasing it. So for example, what I like to start people off is just walking daily. So walking for 5 minutes around the block. So as soon as they come home, to potentially have them like do a block before they go into the house. Or if they have a dog, just go out there and walk for 10 minutes. And then once they kind of get used to that, now we start bumping it up. So trying to go from that 10 minute to the 30 minute walk. And you were actually mentioning that you go with your family. One of the biggest barriers that people have is lack of time and this responsibility with the family where they have all of these other things to do. So involving other people is 100% going to make you more likely to follow through with what you're doing. And it's going to make you accountable, and it can become a family activity where now you're sending these habits to your kids as well and hopefully getting them more active too.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I think this is really cool. So for anybody, you know, I know it's not free access, but it's a great conceptual article. The Impact of Physical Activity in Patients with Type 2 Diabetes, American Journal of Lifestyle Medicine, published June 5th, 2023. I mean, exercise is medicine, non-exercise physical activity, all these different ways to be active, break up sedentary time, all literally, you know, we just talked about. It's evidence-based medicine or non-medical, whatever you want to call that. And it's awesome. I mean, yeah. We got to find a way to help people do more of this stuff. That's really, really cool. And great job.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on the podcast and talking about all this.
Yeah, no problem. I'm happy to. Any type of activity is great. And it really improves the quality of life more than just specifically diabetes, obesity, medicine, and everything else.
Yeah. Medicine for your brain, mental health too.
Very good. If there's anybody out there listening, you have a family member or friend who has type 2 diabetes and just thinks that they have to run or do some intense exercise, make sure you share this podcast with them. Give us a review on whatever you're listening to.
Yeah. So. Do you have some social media you like to tell patients and other people to check you out on?
Yeah. So I am on Instagram as plant-based. Let me pull up those. So as plant-based.endo. And then I'm plant-based.endo. I'm on Instagram. And then on Twitter, I'm at Sandy Bassin, MD.
All right.
Very cool.
All right.
Oh, the mouse isn't working.
Oh, no, the mouse. Hold on.
Oh, no. See if we can fix this.
Oh, no. Oh, my goodness. Oh, no.
We're trying to do the outro. And no. Ruining it.
What the heck? How do I end this thing?
Sandy's like, oh, no, I'm stuck on the Docs Who Left podcast.
We gotta do the outro. Get some new batteries.
Can you just end it right
now? No, I can't. Is this thing a touch screen?
No, it's not.
Some batteries. Hold on. We're going to have to edit this.
No.
Oh, my God. Look at this thing. It's ran out of batteries or something. That's some.
Is it, what are they, triple A's?
Yeah, these are triple A's.
Trey probably stole them from. All right, let me go find some.
It's a question. You don't have the batteries in your house. We don't even have anything that's not pluggable.
Yeah.
What in the world? Let's see.
This is good. Carl's finally getting that physical activity he's been
doing. I know. He's got to go do something. He's got to actually do something. Let's see. No. Like, how ridiculous that is. Mouse. And then, how can I not use the... How is there nothing else in the thing? So you're enjoying Endocrine Fellowship?
Yeah, I love it. I feel like I'm finally doing the thing that I've always wanted to. So as much as I love general medicine, I was not an AKI kind of person or musculoskeletal kind of problem. So it's nice that I get to actually hone in and focus on something specific.
Yeah. Where are you from?
I'm from New Jersey. So I'm a Jersey girl who's implanted into the city, but will probably end up in New Jersey. So.
Oh, okay. And then you went to med school where? Which one?
Dartmouth, up in New Hampshire. So lots of nice. Swimming in the river, hiking.
Very cool. And then where? Residency was where?
Residency was in New Jersey. So Robert Wood Johnson.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see.
To sustain me by feeding me.
There you go. Okay.
Hold on. No.
Well, it's okay. Maybe I guess I could do this, and he'll just cut out the thing. All right. Hold on. Peace.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities.
Okay, so that was at 20, was it 27 something? All right.